Welcome to episode 18 of I Quit, the podcast where we talk to entrepreneurs about one of the scariest days of their lives, the day they quit their job. Money, money, money. We all want it. We all need it. And when you work for yourself, it can often be all you think about. But the pursuit of money often, ironically, comes at a cost to both your personal and professional life. On this episode of I Quit, we're going to change it up a bit and talk to someone who didn't quit their job, but quit its philosophy. Al Tavani is the co-founder of Round Square, and he decided to do something that most entrepreneurs couldn't dream of doing. Quit what is, for many, the ultimate goal. Easy money. Hey, Al, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah. So, Al, I'm a big fan of your work. I haven't bought it yet because what you do is sell homes. But yeah. I think one time my boyfriend and I were driving around and we saw these sets of homes and we're like, what are those? And we went in and it was just incredible. And we started looking into your company and I've just been one of your biggest fans. So for people who don't know, tell everyone about Round Square.
Yeah. So we started Round Square roughly 3 years ago. We used to build single family, kind of semi-detached inner city homes with a company called Beyond Homes for almost 10 years. We kind of hit a tipping point and we're really evaluating our values and what we had succeeded in and what we did with Beyond Homes and what we wanted to do in the future. And it's always about building sustainability. How do we get more people to live in the urban framework? And how do we really provide value? And so we stopped, we decided that we were going to stop with Beyond and look at ways of densifying the inner city. And so we started through townhomes. And over the last 3 years, we've been doing a ton of townhomes, like the ones you just mentioned. And the business continued to evolve. And so we built our first kind of commercial mixed-use building in Altidore. And then we eventually acquired some other pieces and assets. And now we're building basically mixed-use, multi-residential buildings. And so it's been quite the journey. It's been fast paced, lots of change and lots of learning. And yeah, it's incredible. I'm super stoked.
And I'm not a real estate person at all. I really don't find home building that to be that interesting. But honestly, ever since seeing the Round Square projects, I've become so fascinated in what you're doing because it's obvious how different it is than what everybody else is doing. And if you're listening to this, I invite you to go, you know, Google Round Square and just see the kind of townhomes, because when I think of home builders, they're building homes and you have to put your personality in it with painting and furniture and things like that. But your home, your townhomes are, packed with personality before you even put a single thing in it, which is so interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because like I think when we, like I said, when we first started, we were really trying to customize these things, really trying to like add personality to it, but very quickly realized we want people's expressions and be able to really come into a blank slate and leave that canvas for someone else to come and paint with their personality. And so really, I think from a design perspective, we just wanted to set right the first framework for people to kind of take it to that next step. And so every single one of our projects, I think we take that approach. I think where Round Square has evolved for us now is we continue to ask ourselves the question of accessibility, affordability, how do we impact more lives? And really, does having nice things need to be only for those? I think a lot of people feel like they can't afford design or can't access design. And so for us, it's like, how do we make that more accessible to more people? And to me, like the home that you live in reflects who you are, but it's not a true reflection of who you are, because sometimes it's out of circumstance. And so we've really been focused on how do people live within their communities and how do we get them to really collide and have those experiences more? And so Round Square Life is the future of Round Square, and it's really about access to design, collisions within community, and purposeful, intentional collisions that we are helping facilitate.
Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me as you were talking that, and basically how I'm gushing over your company, that this may sound like a sponsored podcast, but it is not. I am just a big fan. But and those decisions you were just talking about is sort of why we wanted to bring you onto the show, because those things that you describe all cost you money, all cut into your margins. And I think, at least I hope, when people think about home builders, they realize that the margin's pretty nice. It's pretty comfortable. But you've decided to take a different, you've decided to quit this idea that a lot of money is the sign of success. And that's interesting for an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So maybe that, for me, I'll probably take this back to being a kid. I grew up born and raised Northeast Calgary and also Southeast Calgary. So my family lived in Dover. We lived in Temple. My dad was a blue collar kind of 9 to 5. He worked at CP Rail for almost 30 years and then eventually got a pension. My mom was an entrepreneur. I think where I get a lot of my spirit from, she started a catering business in our house and it blew up and we built like an extra kitchen. And so my mom catered for her whole entire life. But I would say, you know, we were lower class for a long time. They migrated as refugees. And so one of the things I learned from my parents, because both of them were not educated, is the work ethic. Like we had to work, and without money, we didn't have anything. And so I learned the value of money very quickly when I was younger. And it was like almost instilled and ingrained in me that in order to be successful, I had to chase money. And so like I would do whatever it took to really get paid. And even as a kid, I was doing things that probably weren't kosher because, you know, it was just the way that I felt like I had to do it in order to really be successful. And it was like silly things. Like, I had friends who like offloaded a truck and it was of like candy. And I was younger. I was like in grade 6 and they were in grade 9 and 10. And I would buy like wholesale packs of gum and then sell them to school for 50 cents a piece. And so that's how I got my lunch money or 7-Eleven money, because my parents couldn't give it to me. And that's kind of the environment I grew up in. So instilled in me as a very, very young person. And I think as I got older and started to understand my values and recognize like, you know, you could chase money forever. And it can never, ever be, it can never measure your kind of wealth in a sense. And I think there came a tipping point for me where I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. Like it's a gross cycle and you never actually get to live, like, because you're always concerned about, you know, am I making enough? And I always used to be like, oh, I want my first million by this age. And I'm like, that, like, it's so funny to reflect on that, because that means nothing to me anymore. Mm-hmm. And ever since that's happened, I'd say monumentally, my life has changed, and I've been put in a place with a great team that's now given me the opportunity to focus on what my skills are.
What I find so interesting about the way you're talking about money is, I mean, you'll hear money doesn't matter, money doesn't make the man, blah, blah, blah. But in my experience, those people tend to come from money. So that's easy for them to say. And so, I mean, you have no doubt this feeling that you have to sort of prove something or prove your value and things like that. And so money is that thing. And you're saying, no, it's not, that's not who I am anymore.
Yeah. Like, so don't get me wrong. I have a family, I have a kid, I have mortgage payments. I'm accountable to them. I have to provide for them. I understand. Like, I used to get frustrated when I would hear that from other people, like money doesn't matter. I think what I'm saying is it's not how I measure my success as a person. Mm-hmm. And then even as an organization, and part of the detriment, and we can just dive into that. Yeah. And that's why now I think I have other people who tell me like, no, Al, that's crazy. That won't make sense. And we won't be here tomorrow if we continue down that path. And so my job, what I'm saying is, like, when you align yourselves with a certain value and mission, and you have a passion that really inserts yourself to kind of go after that, the money will come, in my mind. Like, mm-hmm. It will be there. You just have to have the drive, the work ethic, and be aligned with what you want. And so
does the money that you make with that philosophy feel better than money before?
Yeah, I don't know if it feels better, but I feel better every day. Mm-hmm. Like, I get up every day and I'm not like, oh man, I didn't do that great, or we didn't do that great on this project. Cause I look at the overall impact of the things that we're doing and I'm like, wow, man, that connected or touched, you know, X amount of people's lives. And that's a huge value add to me. Mm-hmm. Now. And that's kind of some of the ways that I measure success. You know, I partnered with Our Daily Brett for a coffee shop called Neighbor. And I've told this story a few times just because it's so important to me. They only occupy like 500 square feet in our building in Altidore of a 10,000 square feet footprint. And we didn't do it from a financial perspective. And we tried to make a deal that made sense to him and us. And I mean, I still don't think we're crushing it. I think the food industry is a really tough one, but it's doing awesome. But more importantly, like, I would hear people in the community tell me how that's their favorite place to hang out. Mm-hmm. And when I think about that, I'm like, you actually only get to interact with 500 square feet of that entire building And that's changed your whole perspective of that whole place.
That whole neighborhood, that whole place. Yeah, exactly. And right. I think the interest and what people find interesting, what they want to do is being scaled back now. Really, people, I was at a place recently and it was 3 tacos and 1 salad and that's it. And you're like, yeah, that's all this place has. And it was packed and people, yeah, I just need 3 tacos. It's great.
Yeah. And I think like for me, that was like the moment of clarity. It's like, wow, if we focus on, you know, that model that we created here of doing great, being intentional with the people that we're bringing to the building, the tenants that are in the building, and really listening to them and trying to find out what their needs are. How does this work for you? What are the issues that you think you'd run into down the future? And, you know, the landlord tenant relationship has been one that's been very challenging, I think, for a long time. And you hear the horror stories. And so, you know, we're doing a building in Bridgeland, and I guess I don't mind telling you this, and Lauren will get mad at me, but we ended up getting Phil and Sebastian's signed committed, Village Ice Cream signed committed, and Una Pizza signed committed. And so when I think about that building, it's only like a 5,000 square feet footprint, but it is like going to be the coolest building ever because of those people, because they believed in what we were trying to achieve. And I believed in them as vendors. And you have this, like, you know, I'd hear them say things like, man, I've never actually talked to my landlord when I have to negotiate a lease, because you get shoved off to the lawyers. Mm-hmm. It's like, I couldn't call them to tell them that I'm uncomfortable with the way the HVAC is running, because it's like, they want to know accountability for that. And so it's really interesting to think about thoughtful placemaking. And really, being an urbanist, like, I'm thinking about what is going to be the most successful thing here, because I'm in it. Like, I believe in the urban. I believe in the experience. And so it's not about like, oh, is this going to turn the highest ROI? And I still believe it will. But not only for us, it's an incredible building now. It's going to have so much value. But the community benefit is going to be over the moon.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm just super stoked.
I think I'm still trying to understand why more business owners, home builders don't think the way you do.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough question. You know, you measure authenticity. I think like I'm a pretty positive person. And so what you're hearing me say is like, I go with positivity. I think, you know, Mike, you probably know this better even than I do. The one thing that's really taken a toll on me as of late is when I get demonized as like the bad developer still, and yeah, I'm fighting through communities to explain to them what the impact is and what the future of community should look like. And so I think that oftentimes, and I mean, I went through this myself, is like you end up getting super frustrated and you almost just want to do things that they no longer believe in or support, or you lose faith in the system. And mm-hmm. So it's like, no, I'm going to do whatever I can, and I'm going to do it. Like, and I've said this to them. I said, if you want me to build a box within the box that you've created, your outcome is going to be a box with very little articulation, because we've put developers in a box. Mm-hmm. And so when we complain about the outcome and quality of outcome, part of it has to do with what we've given developers and where we spent our time kind of arguing with them. It's like, the density honestly should never matter. If we're building with an established network or established area and we're using existing infrastructure, we should never ever make a decision based on density, because we can really mitigate density and its impacts through different forms. And so let's focus on the outcome. What is the experience for the community? What does the urban look like? What is the street interface? Where are the plants? Where are the trees? Like, mm-hmm. That's where those decisions should be collectively decided. And if the city decides that the density is the density and they can get on board, and we leave it to transportation, planning, development, engineering, because that's all very complex, we would get better outcomes. Mm-hmm. I honestly believe that. And so my encouragement to industry peers when I sit around a table with them is like, let's all like get together and convince them that this is better. Because I think even when we started my first company, Beyond Homes, it was all about how do we up the expectations of a better urban? And that's still my outcome. It's like, I can't make a better Calgary by myself. I can only do it with my industry peers. And so really what I'm trying to say is let's make them all super amazing.
Yeah.
Because if we can successfully do that, we're going to have a kick-ass city.
When you decided to sort of quit this idea that chasing, because we live in a city where home development is hot and you could go for the low-hanging fruit, it was sort of an amalgamation of a bunch of ideas that got you there. What would you tell someone who's thinking about quitting?
You got to have tremendous drive, tremendous work ethic. I think you have to work. And one thing I would say is like, oftentimes you have to go through the process. Like, you don't know day one where you're going to end up on day two or day three. And sometimes you may feel like the contributions you're making are not where you want to be. And you may recognize that thoughtfully, but sometimes it's just a ladder. It's like, it's an approach of getting there. It's funny. I just came from a meeting with a guy who's leaving probably the most incredible gig you could ever have. With one of the largest organizations in Western Canada. And he's like, he's basically in touch with the owner and they have conversations every day. Like, it is an extremely powerful position.
Yeah.
And he told me today he's quitting, he's leaving. And our meeting came back today to tell me that because he felt bad for something that happened 2 years ago that he couldn't control. And the reason why he's leaving is because he felt that he's lost his ability to hold his integrity because he doesn't actually get to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I hear something like that, it's like, wow, man, like, you were actually always a good person. You were masked by this inability to perform and get there. And so I told him, like, that's an amazing step and breakthrough for you. And so sometimes it's just like, you don't see it, but you feel it. And that those emotions come up, I think, oftentimes for people. And then it's just a matter of acting on it. And I know it's kind of silly to say, but like, what is really at the table for loss? Like, what do you really have to do? That's mm-hmm. one thing I do a lot is I measure what failure could feel like.
And it's not like you don't have anything to risk. I mean, sometimes when we talk about people quitting their jobs or that millennial lifestyle, it's like, you got nothing. You have a family, you have a partner, you have kids, you have all this stuff. There's people who are depending on you.
Yeah. And even more so than that, I feel like I now have like as ego driven and centric, this may sound, but I have a reputation to uphold now. Like, I've been trying to help build good city building. And so I have people who have invested in us, who believe in us, even like yourselves, that I feel like I have an obligation to do right by the people who stood beside us, the homeowners that took risks on us. And so it's like, I have to do this. I have to be better. I have to push through because other people want to kind of almost be a part of that. Mm-hmm. And so I want to make sure I do that, not only for my family and not only for the financial reasons. And it's more so for the merit of like, leaving something better, like making sure there's contribution.
Yeah. And I think for me, talking about your friend who's leaving the company, when a lot of people, I don't know who taught us this, but you can have your personality and your beliefs, but then you have to check them when you go to work at 8:30 a.m. or whatever. And I think now, like, I don't think I do. And I'm finding more people who are like, no, my beliefs, who I am, my personality, I want to be in every minute of my day, whether I'm at work, whether I'm at home, whatever. I don't want to have to think two different things because my company thinks something else. I want my company and my personal beliefs to be the same thing.
Yeah. I think that's like such a valid point. And again, I feel like I'm repeating this, but it takes time. Even for me as an owner of an organization, it takes time to feel comfortable and vulnerable enough to be able to really express that's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think as we do that, though, more and more people understand what the values of the organization are. And then does those values align with them mm-hmm. and their beliefs? And so I think what we need to do a better job at is making sure people understand those values internally, externally, because it's almost like the Holy Grail. It's like, this is who we are. And we won't make decisions if they don't line up with this. And, you know, we get asked all the time about, hey, do you want to come out and do a greenfield suburban development with us? And, you know, I've even been talked down to when I've said, well, I just don't see how that aligns with us. And it's like, well, what do you mean? Like, why does that align with you guys? Like, so like, you don't think that the people who live out there aren't important? It's like, no, I never said that.
Yeah.
It's a misrepresentation. It's just like, there's a need in the city and within these established communities. And that's where I feel like we can be the most effective. Mm-hmm. And so my take on growth, I understand its necessity mm-hmm. and why it's important to city infrastructure, but it's not where I feel like I can contribute and add meaning.
Well, and your business doesn't have to be for everyone. That can be for the people that you want it to be for, and that's totally fine. Okay, I'm going to ask this question. I've never asked this question on this podcast before, but what do you see yourself quitting in the future? Do you see something down the line?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And this would be a really bold statement. I think everyone in my company would be like, why are you saying that?
Oh God, I'm excited.
I think we eventually quit building infrastructure and things one day.
Mm-hmm.
Why I see that is because...
And you mean like new roads for new neighborhoods,
No. I mean new buildings.
Oh, okay.
I mean new like why are we building new things when there's so many existing things that have yet to be fixed? And so if you were to survey what is the existing infrastructure that we have in houses and homes and you know, in these cities and buildings that are vacant or not working, I think there's going to be a massive need. And from a sustainability perspective, that we need to start considering how we be more sensitive to what the environmental footprint of those things are.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a building is fully serviced, but it's no longer like it's a, you know, a triple C grade building or whatever it is, how do we fix that building and fix that as a way to bring more people in or bring new people in rather than building a building across the street kind of thing. So Strategic just obviously converted an office building to a residential building. And I can tell you the financial metrics are very difficult. They don't make a ton of sense. But when you look at it from a pure, like a purely sustainability perspective, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of future and runway in that.
It's a bold move. And again, they're sort of like you, they're a company that said, we're going to spend more money, but it lines up with our company better. So, and that's sort of what, like all my conferences that I do, we pay every single person. So every speaker, everyone gets paid. And when I say that, people are like, isn't that what happens? And I'm like, no, absolutely. Most conferences don't pay anybody. They pay an exposure and experience and things like that. And so when we're looking at events that maybe aren't as profitable, you know, you can be like, oh, well, if we didn't pay everyone, then it's easy money. But the event, everything is so much better because we're paying people and the speakers give better presentations. Thus, the experience is better for the attendees. And it's so obvious to me. We've never done it any other way that it's always so baffling when if I get asked to speak at a conference or whatever and there's no payment, you know, and I'm just like, but that's so simple. I don't understand. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, it's funny because I don't really have a ton of experience within that sector, but I've obviously heard that it's kind of like the whole idea of interns and do you pay your interns?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, traditionally for a lot of these kind of architectural, and it still happens, and you have a lot of firms that do not pay their interns because they feel like they create experience that's enough for them to go out and do different things. Like I was actually recently in Copenhagen and NOMA doesn't pay any of their actual interns. And it's it's a 3-month intern.
Wow.
And so it's like, you know, one of the best restaurants in the world. And so the whole like mechanics and model behind that is you leave with something that's invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
And so like for them to pay you versus what we put into you. And so, you know, do I believe that that should be the case? No.
Yeah.
It's incredibly expensive to live in a city like Copenhagen. And you have chefs from all over the world that are coming to intern there. And so, yeah, it's one that I think there's this up and down, right? How do you measure it?
I'm excited. Well, this was super great because I think as people are thinking about quitting their jobs or maybe they just needed a little more wind in their sails after they've quit, they know that it's you can be ethical and fair and live by your values and still be super successful as you are. And I just think that's invaluable. Thank you so much.
No, well, thanks for having me. And like I said, I don't think the journey is never easy. It's never meant to be. And it's meant to live within the struggle. Like there's this phrase that I always kind of resonate with, and it's like struggle is the meaning of life. And so it's like a lot of people look to when is it going to be greener on the other side? And it's like, no, it's greener now. Mm-hmm. You just have to experience that and live through that and really reflect and understand it.
Oh, such a perfect message. Thank you so much, Al.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Thank you. Well, that wraps up this episode of I Quit. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you so much to my guest, Al Devani from Round Square. If you'd like to learn more about Round Square, please go to their beautiful Instagram page. It's at RNDSQR_ on Instagram. It's so amazing. You'll be instantly inspired. And if you have any questions or comments for me, my handle on Twitter and Instagram is at Mike's Bloggity. And visit our website, iquitpodcast.ca, for all our old episodes. Until next time.